I wiggled my hand round behind my back to try to grab it, but it was attached. That was a shame, because what I really needed was a weapon. I was frightened, but I knew I couldn't let my fear get the better of me. I needed to think clearly, clearly and fast, because sooner or later the car was going to stop, and then it was going to be him or me, and there was no way that he was going to do for Katie and Mum and me. No fucking way. I had to believe it. Had to keep telling myself over and over, this was going to end with me alive and him dead. Over the week since Katie died, I thought about a lot of ways to make Mark Henderson pay for what he'd done, but I never considered murder. I'd thought about other things. Painting things on his walls, smashing his windows, been there, done that. Calling his girlfriend to tell her everything Katie had told me, how many times, when, where, how he liked to call her teacher's pet. I thought about getting some of the guys in the year above to kick the shit out of him. I thought about cutting off his dick and feeding it to him. But I didn't think about killing him. Not until today. How did I end up here? I can't believe how stupid I was to let him get the upper hand. I should never have gone to his house, not without a clear plan, not without knowing exactly what I was going to do. I didn't even think. I was just making it up as I went along. I knew that he was coming back from holiday. I'd heard Sean and Erin talking about it. And then after everything Louise said, and after the conversation I'd had with Julia about how it wasn't my fault or Mum's, I just thought, you know what, it's time. I just wanted to stand in front of him and make him share a little in the blame. I wanted him to admit it, to admit what he'd done and that it was wrong. So I just went there, and I'd already smashed the window of the back door, so it was easy enough getting in. The house smelled dirty, like he'd gone away without emptying the rubbish or something. For a while, I just stood in the kitchen and used the torch on my phone to look around. But then I decided I'd turn on the light, because he wouldn't be able to see it from the road, and even if his neighbors saw it, they'd just think he'd come home. It smelled dirty because it was dirty. Disgusting, actually. Washing up in the sink, and ready meal cartons with bits of food still stuck in them, and all the surfaces coated in grease, and shitloads of empty red wine bottles in the recycling bin. It's not how I expected it would be at all. From the way he was at school, always really neatly dressed and his fingernails clean, clipped close, I thought he'd be kind of anal. I went through to the living room and scanned around using my phone again. I didn't turn the light on in there, in case you could see it from the road. It was so ordinary. Cheap furniture, lots of books and CDs, no pictures on the walls. It was ordinary and dirty. And sad. Upstairs was even worse. The bedroom was rank. The bed was unmade, the wardrobes open, and it smelled bad. Different to downstairs. It smelled sour and sweaty, like a sick animal. I closed the curtains and turned on the bedside light. It was even worse than downstairs. It looked like somewhere someone old would live. Ugly yellow walls and brown curtains and clothes and papers on the floor. I opened a drawer and there were earplugs and nail clippers inside. In the bottom drawer, there were condoms and lube and fluffy cuffs. I felt sick. I sat down on the bed, and then I noticed that the sheet had pulled away from the mattress a bit in the opposite corner, and I could see a brown stain underneath. I actually thought I was going to vomit. It was painful, physically painful to think about Katie being here, with him, in this horrible room, in this disgusting house. I was ready to leave. It was a stupid idea anyway, going there without a plan. I turned off the light and went back downstairs, and I was almost at the back door when I heard a noise from outside, footsteps coming up the path. And then the door swung open. And there he was. He looked ugly. His face and eyes red, his mouth open, I just went for him. I wanted to scratch his eyes out of his ugly face. I wanted to hear him scream. I don't know what happened then. He fell, I think, and I was on my knees, and something skittered across the floor towards me, a piece of metal like a key. I reached for it, and found that it wasn't jagged but smooth. A circle. A silver circle with a black onyx clasp. I turned it over in my hand. I could hear the kitchen clock ticking loudly, and the sound of Mark's breath. "Lena," he said. And I looked up and met his eye, and I could see that he was afraid. I got to my feet. "Lena," he said again, and he stepped towards me. I could feel myself smiling, because out of the corner of my eye I'd spotted another silver thing, a sharp thing, and I knew exactly what I was going to do. I was going to take a breath and steady myself, and I was going to wait until he said my name one more time, and then I was going to take the scissors that were lying on the kitchen table and I was going to jam them into his fucking neck. "Lena," he said, and he reached for me. And everything happened really fast after that. I grabbed the scissors and I went for him. But he's taller than me and his arms were raised and I must have missed, mustn't I? Because he isn't dead. He's driving. And I'm stuck back here with a bump on my head. I started yelling stupidly because seriously, who was going to hear me? I could tell the car was moving fast. But I yelled anyway. "Let me out! Let me out, you stupid bastard!" I banged my fists on the metal hood above me, screaming as loud as I could, and then suddenly, bang! The car stopped moving, and I slammed into the edge of the car boot. And then I let myself cry. It wasn't just the pain. For some reason, I kept thinking about all those windows we broke, Josh and I, and about how much it would have upset Katie. She would hate this, all of it. She'd hate her brother having to tell the truth after months of lying. She'd hate me being hurt like this. But most of all, she'd hate those broken windows. Because they were the thing she dreaded. Broken windows and pedos scrawled on the walls and shit through the letterbox and journalists on the pavement and people spitting, throwing punches. I cried for the pain, and I cried because I felt bad for Katie, for how this would have broken her heart. "But you know what, Kay?" I found myself whispering to Katie like a madwoman, like Julia muttering to herself in the dark. "I'm sorry. I'm really sorry. Because that isn't what he deserves. I can say this now because you're gone. And I'm lying in the boot of his car with my mouth bleeding and my head split open. I can say this categorically. Mark Henderson doesn't deserve to be hounded or beaten. He deserves worse. I know you loved him, but he didn't just ruin your life. He's ruined mine too. He killed my mother."
Erin. I was in the back office with Sean when the call came in. A pale young woman with a stricken expression stuck her head around the door.
"There's another one, sir. Someone spotted her from up on the ridge. Someone in the water, a young woman."
From the look on Sean's face, I thought he was going to heave.
"It can't be," I said. "There's uniforms all over the place. How can there be another one?"
By the time we got there, there was a crowd on the bridge, uniforms doing their best to keep them up there. Sean ran and I followed. We hammered along under the trees. I wanted to slow down. I wanted to stop. The last thing on earth I wanted to see was them pulling that girl out of the water. It wasn't her, though. It was Jules. She was already on the bank when we got there. There was a weird sound in the air, like a magpie scolding. It took me a while to realize that it was coming from her, from Jules. The chattering of her teeth. Her entire body shook Her sodden clothes clung to her pitifully thin frame, which folded in on itself like a collapsing deck chair. I called her name and she stared up at me, her bloodshot eyes looking straight through me, as though she couldn't focus, as though she didn't register who I was. Sean took off his jacket and put it around her shoulders. She muttered, trance-like. She wouldn't say a word to us. She hardly seemed to notice we were there. She just sat, trembling, glowering at the black water, her lips working the way they did when she saw her sister on the slab, soundless but purposeful, as though she were having an argument with some unseen adversary. The relief, such as it was, lasted barely a few minutes before the next crisis hit. The uniforms who'd gone to welcome Mark Henderson home from his holiday had found his house empty. And not just empty, bloody. There were signs of a struggle in the kitchen, blood smeared all over the floor and the door handles, and Henderson's car was nowhere to be found.
"Oh, Christ," Sean said. "Lena."
"No," I cried, trying to convince myself as well as Sean. I was thinking about the conversation I'd had with Henderson the morning before he left for his holiday. There was something about him, something weak, something wounded. There was nothing more dangerous than a man like that. No, there were uniforms at the house. They were waiting for him. He couldn't have... But Sean was shaking his head.
"No, they weren't. They weren't there.
There was a bad smash on the A68 last night and it was all hands on deck. A decision was taken to redeploy resources. There was no one at Henderson's house. Not until this morning."
"Fuck. Fuck!"
"Quite. He'll have come back and seen the windows all smashed up and jumped to the right conclusion. That Lena Abbott told us something."
"And then what? He went to her house and took her and brought her back to his place?"
"How the hell should I know?" Sean snapped. "This is our fault. We should have been watching the house. We should have been watching her. It's our fault. She's gone."
Jules. The policeman, not one I'd met before, wanted to come into the house with me. He was young, 25 perhaps, although his hairless cherubic face made him look even younger. As kind as he appeared, I insisted he leave. I didn't want to be alone with a man in the house, no matter how harmless he looked. I went upstairs and ran myself a bath. Water, water, everywhere. I had no great desire to be immersed in water again, but I could think of no better way to drive the chill from my bones. I sat on the edge of the tub, biting my lip to stop my teeth from chattering, my phone in my hand. I kept ringing Lena's number over and over. I kept hearing her cheery message, her voice full of a light I've never heard when she speaks to me. When the bath was half full, I lowered myself in, my teeth gritted against panic, my heartbeat rising as my body sank. "It's okay, it's okay, it's okay." "You said that. That night when we were in here together, when you poured hot water over my skin, when you soothed me." "It's okay," you said. "It's okay, Julia. It's okay." It wasn't, of course. But you didn't know that. All you thought had happened was that I'd had an awful day, been made fun of, humiliated, rejected by a boy I liked. And finally, in an act of extreme melodrama, I'd gone to the drowning pool and flung myself in. You were angry because you thought I'd done it to hurt you, to get you into trouble, to make Mum love me more, even more than she already did, to make her reject you. Because it would have been your fault, wouldn't it? You had bullied me, and you were supposed to be keeping an eye on me, and this had happened on your watch. I turned the tap with my toe and let my body slip down into the tub, my shoulders submerged, my neck, my head. I listened to the sounds of the house, distorted, muffled, made alien by the water. A sudden thump made me jerk upwards into the cold air. I listened. Nothing. I was imagining things. But when I slipped back down, I was sure I heard a creak on the stairs, footsteps slow and regular along the corridor. I sat bolt upright, gripping the edge of the tub. Another creak. A door handle turning.
Lena?
I called out, my voice sounding childish, reedy and thin.
Lena? Is that you?
The answering silence rang in my ears, and in it, I imagined I heard voices. Your voice. Another of your phone calls. The first one. The first one after our fight at the wake, after the night when you asked that terrible question. It wasn't long after, a week, maybe two, when you rang late at night and left me a message. You were tearful, your words slurred, your voice barely audible. You told me you were going back to Beckford. You were going to see an old friend. You needed to talk to someone, and I was no use. I didn't think about it at the time. I didn't care. Only now I understood, and I shivered despite the warmth of the water. All this time I've been blaming you, but it should have been the other way around. You went back to see an old friend. You were looking for solace because I rejected you, because I wouldn't talk to you. And you went to him. I failed you, and I kept on failing you. I sat up, my arms wrapped tightly around my knees, and the waves of grief just kept coming. I failed you. I hurt you. And the thing that kills me is that you never knew why. You spent your whole life trying to understand why I hated you so much, and all I had to do was tell you. All I had to do was answer when you called. And now, it was too late. There was another noise, louder, a creak, a scrape. I wasn't imagining it. There was someone in the house. I pulled myself out of the bath and dressed as quietly as I could. It's Lena, I told myself. It is. It's Lena. I crept through the upstairs rooms, but there was no one there. And from every mirror my terrified face mocked me. It's not Lena. It's not Lena. It had to be. But where would she be? She'd be in the kitchen. She'd be hungry. I'd go downstairs, and there she would be with her head stuck in the fridge. I tiptoed down the stairs, across the hall, past the living room door. And there, out of the corner of my eye, I saw it. A shadow. A figure. Someone sitting on the window seat.
Erin. Anything was possible. When you hear hooves, you look for horses, but you can't discount zebras. Not out of hand. Which is why, while Sean took Callie to have a look at the scene at Henderson's place, I'd been dispatched to speak to Louise Whittaker about this confrontation she'd had with Lena just before Lena disappeared. When I got to the Whittaker's house, Josh answered the door, as he always seemed to do. And, as always seemed to be the case, he looked alarmed to see me.
"What's going on?" he asked. "Have you found Lena?"
I shook my head. "Not yet, but don't worry." He turned away from me, shoulders slumped. I followed him into the house. At the bottom of the stairs, he turned back to face me.
"Is it because of Mum that she ran away?" he asked, his cheeks reddening a little.
"Why would you ask that, Josh?"
"Mum made her feel bad," he replied sourly. "Now that Lena's mum's not alive, she blames Lena for everything. It's stupid. It's as much my fault as hers, but she blames her for everything. And now Lena's gone," he said, his voice rising. "She's gone."
"Who are you talking to, Josh?"
Louise called from upstairs. Her son ignored her, so I responded. "It's me, Mrs. Whittaker, D.S. Morgan. Can I come up?"
Louise was wearing a grey tracksuit which had seen better days. Her hair was pulled back, her face wan.
"He's angry with me," she said by way of greeting.
"He blames me for Lena's running off. He thinks it's my fault."
I followed her along the landing.
"He blames me. I blame Nell. I blame Lena. Round and round and round we go."
I stopped in the bedroom doorway. The room was all but empty, bed stripped, wardrobe empty. The pale lilac walls bore the scars of hastily removed blue tack. Louise smiled wearily.
"You can come in. I'm almost done in here."
She kneeled down, returning to the task I must have interrupted, which was placing books into cardboard boxes. I squatted down at her side to help, but before I was able to pick up my first book, she placed her hand firmly on my arm.
"No, thank you. I'd rather do this myself."
I stood up. "I don't mean to be rude," she said.
"I just don't want other people to touch her things."
"It's silly, isn't it?" she said, looking up at me, eyes shining.
"But I only want her to have touched them. I want there to be something left of her, on the book jackets, on the bedclothes, on her hairbrush."
She stopped and took a deep breath. "I don't seem to be making a lot of progress. Moving on, moving past things. Moving at all."
"I don't think anyone would expect you to," I said softly.
Not yet."
"Which implies that at some point I won't feel like this. But the thing people don't seem to realize is that I don't want to not feel like this. How can I not feel like this? My sadness feels right. It weighs the right amount, crushes me just enough. My anger is clean. It bolsters me."
"Well," she sighed,
"only now my son thinks I'm responsible for Lena going missing. Sometimes I wonder if he thinks I pushed Nell Abbott off that cliff."
She sniffed.
"In any case, he holds me responsible for the fact that Lena was left like that, motherless, alone."
I stood in the middle of the room, my arms carefully folded, trying not to touch anything, like I was at a crime scene, like I didn't want to contaminate anything.
"She's motherless," I said, "but is she fatherless? Do you honestly believe that Lena has no idea who her father is? Do you know if she and Katie ever spoke about that?"
Louise shook her head. "I'm pretty sure she doesn't know. That was what Nell always said.
I thought it was odd, like a lot of Nell's parenting choices. Not just odd, but irresponsible. I mean, what if there was a genetic issue, an illness, something like that? It seemed unfair on Lena, in any case, not to even give the child the option of getting to know her father. When pressed, and I did press her, back when she and I were on better terms, she said it was a one-night stand, someone she met when she first moved to New York. She claimed not to have known his last name. When I thought about that later on, I concluded it must have been a lie, because I'd seen a photograph of Nell moving into her first flat in Brooklyn, her T-shirt stretched tight over her already pregnant belly."
Louise stopped stacking books. She shook her head again.
"So, in that sense, Josh is right. She is alone. There's no other family apart from the aunt, or none that I ever heard of. And as for boyfriends..."
She gave a rueful smile.
"Nell once told me that she only ever slept with married men because they were discreet and undemanding, and they let her get on with her life. Her affairs were private. I've no doubt there were men, but she didn't make that sort of thing public. Whenever you saw her, she was alone. Alone, or with her daughter. She gave a little sigh. The only man I think I've ever seen Lena be even vaguely affectionate to is Sean. She coloured slightly as she said his name, turning her head away from me, as though she'd said something she shouldn't have.
Sean Townsend? Really?
She didn't reply. Louise? She got to her feet to fetch another pile of books from the shelf. Louise? What are you saying? That there's something untoward between Sean and Lena?
God, no!
She gave a brittle laugh.
Not Lena!
Not Lena. So,
Nell?
Are you saying there was something between him and Nell Abbott? Louise pursed her lips and turned her face from mine so I couldn't read her expression.
Because you know that would be highly inappropriate. To investigate the suspicious death of someone with whom he'd had a relationship, that would be...
What would that be? Unprofessional? Unethical? Grounds for dismissal? He wouldn't. There is no way he could have done that. No way he could have kept that from me. I would have seen something, noticed something, wouldn't I? And then I thought of how he looked the first time I saw him. Stood there on the banks of the pool with Nell Abbott at his feet, head bowed as though he was praying over her. His watery eyes, his shaking hands, his absent manner, his sadness. But that was about his mother, surely. Louise continued silently packing books into boxes. "Listen to me," I said, raising my voice to get her full attention. "If you are aware that there was some sort of relationship between Sean and Nell, then..."
"I didn't say that,"
she said, looking me dead in the eye.
"I didn't say anything of the sort. Sean Townsend is a good man."
She got to her feet.
"Now, I have a lot to do, detective. I think it's probably time you left."
Sean. The back door had been left open, the scene of crime officers said. Not just unlocked, but open. A tang of iron caught in me nostrils as I entered. Callie Buchan was already there, talking to the Sockos. She asked me a question, but I wasn't really listening because I was straining to hear something else. An animal whimpering. "Shh," I said. "Listen." "They've checked the house, sir," Callie said. "There's no one here." "Does he have a dog?" I asked her. She looked at me blankly. "Is there a dog? A pet in the house? Any sign of one?" "Nope. No sign at all, sir. Why'd you ask?" I listened again. But the sound was gone, and I was left with a sense of déjà vu. I've seen this before. I've done all this before. I've listened to a dog whimper. I've walked through a bloody kitchen into the rain. Only it isn't raining. And there's no dog. Callie was staring at me.
"Sir, there's something over here."
She pointed at an item on the floor, a pair of kitchen scissors lying in a smear of blood.
"That's not just a nick, is it? I mean, it might not be arterial, but it doesn't look good."
"Hospitals?"
"Nothing so far. No sign of either of them."
Her phone rang, and she went outside to take the call. I remained stock still in the kitchen, while two scene of crime officers worked quietly around me. I watched one of them pluck with tweezers a strand of long blonde hair which had snagged on the edge of the table. I felt a sudden wave of nausea, saliva flooding my mouth. I couldn't credit it. I've seen worse scenes than this, far worse, and remained impassive. Haven't I? Have I not walked through bloodier kitchens than this? I touched my palm to my wrist and realized that Callie was speaking to me again, her head poked around the doorframe.
"Can I have a word, sir?"
I followed her outside, and while I removed the plastic covers from my shoes, she filled me in on the latest.
Traffic have picked up Henderson's car, she said. I mean, not picked up, but they've got his red Vauxhall on camera twice. She looked down at her notebook. Thing is, it's a bit confusing because the first capture, just after 3 this morning, has him on the A68 going north towards Edinburgh. But then, a couple of hours later, at 5:15, he's driving south on the A1 just outside Eyemouth. So maybe he dropped something off?
Got rid of something, she means. Something or someone.
Or he's trying to confuse us.
Or he changed his mind about the best place to run to, I said. Or he's panicking. She nodded.
Running around like a headless chicken?
I didn't like that idea. I didn't want him, or anyone else, headless. I wanted him calm.
Was it possible to see if there was anyone else in the car? Anyone in the passenger seat? I asked her.
She shook her head, lips pursed.
No, of course,
she tailed off. Of course, that doesn't mean that there isn't another person in the car. It just means that the other person isn't upright. Again, that odd sense of having been here before. A scrap of memory which didn't feel like my own. How could it be anyone else's? It must have been part of a story, told to me by someone I don't remember. A woman lying slumped in a car seat. A sick woman. Convulsing. Drooling. Not much of a story. I couldn't remember the rest of it. I only knew that thinking about it turned my stomach. I pushed it aside.
Newcastle would seem the obvious place, Callie said. I mean, if he's running. Planes, trains, ferries, world's his oyster. But the odd thing is that since that 5 AM sighting, they've got nothing. So either he stopped, or he's got off the main road. He might be taking smaller roads, the coastal road even.
Isn't there a girlfriend? I asked, interrupting her flow. A woman in Edinburgh.
The famous fiancée, Callie said, eyebrows raised. Well, we're ahead of you there. She, Tracy McBride, her name is, was picked up this morning. Uniform are bringing her down to Beckford for a chat. But just to warn you, our Tracy claims she hasn't seen Mark Henderson for a good while. Almost a year, in fact.
What? I thought they'd just been on holiday together.
That's what Henderson said when he spoke to D.S. Morgan, but according to Tracy, she's not seen hide in a hair of him since he called the whole thing off last autumn. She says he dumped her out of the blue, telling her he'd fallen head over heels for some other woman.
Tracy didn't know who the woman was or what she did.
Nor did I want to, she told me abruptly. She was sitting in the back office of the police station, an hour later, sipping her tea. I was pretty devastated, actually. One minute I'm shopping for wedding dresses, and the next he's telling me he can't go through with it because he's met the love of his life.
She smiled at me sadly, pushing her fingers through cropped dark hair.
After that, I just cut him off, deleted his number, unfriended him, the full Monty. Could you please tell me, has something happened to him? No one will tell me what the hell's going on.
I shook my head. I'm sorry about that, but there's not a lot I can tell you at the moment. We don't believe he's been harmed, though. We just need to find him. We need to talk to him about something.
You don't know where he might go, do you? If he needed to get away? Parents? Friends in the area?
She frowned.
This is not about that dead woman, is it? I read in the papers that there was another one a week or two back. I mean, he wasn't... That wasn't the woman he was seeing, was it?
No, no. It's nothing to do with that.
Oh, okay.
She looked relieved.
I mean, she would have been a bit old for him, wouldn't she?
Why do you say that? Did he like younger women? Tracy looked confused.
No. I mean, how do you mean younger? That woman was, like, about 40, wasn't she? Mark's not yet 30, so...
Right.
You really can't tell me what's going on? She asked.
Was Mark ever violent to you? Did he ever lose his temper? Anything like that?
What? God, no. Never.
She leaned back in her chair, frowning.
Has someone accused him of something? Because he's not like that. He's selfish, no doubt about that, but he's not a bad person, not in that way.
I walked her out to the car, where Uniform were waiting to drive her home, wondering about the ways in which Mark Henderson was bad, wondering whether he'd managed to convince himself that being in love absolved him.
You asked about where he might go,
Tracy said to me when we got to the car.
It's difficult to say without knowing the context, but there's one place I can think of. My dad has a place out on the coast. Mark and I went there at weekends quite a bit. It's quite isolated. There's no one else around. Mark always said it was the perfect escape.
It's unoccupied, this place?
It's not used much. We used to leave a key out the back, under a pot. But earlier this year, we discovered that someone had been using it without our permission. There would be mugs left out, or rubbish in the bins or whatever. So we stopped doing that.
When was the last time that happened? The last time someone used it without asking? She frowned.
Oh, God. A while back. April, I think. Yeah, April. The Easter holidays.
And where exactly is this place?
Howick, she said. It's a tiny little village. Nothing much there at all. Just up the coast from Craster.
Lena. He apologised when he let me out of the boot. I'm sorry, Lena, but what would you have had me do? I started laughing, but he told me to shut up. His fist clenched, and I thought he was going to smack me again, so I did. We were at a house by the sea. Just one house, all by itself, right on the cliff with a garden and a wall, one of those outdoor pub tables. The house looked like it was all locked up. There was no one around. From where I was standing, I couldn't see another building anywhere near us. Just a track running past. Not even a proper road. I couldn't hear anything either. No traffic noise, nothing like that. Just the gulls and the waves on the rocks. No point screaming, he said, like he'd read my mind. Then he took me by the arm and led me over to the table, and handed me a tissue to wipe my mouth. You'll be all right, he said. Will I? I asked, but he just looked away. For a long time we just sat there, side by side, with his hand still on my forearm, his grip gradually loosening as his breathing slowed. I didn't pull away. No point struggling now. Not yet. I was scared. My legs were trembling like mad under the table, and I couldn't make them stop. But it actually felt like that was good, like it was helpful. I felt strong, the way I had when he found me in the house and we fought. Yeah, okay, he won. Only because I didn't go for the kill straight away. Only because I wasn't sure what I was dealing with. That was only the first round. If he thought that was me beaten, he had another thing coming. If he knew what I'd been feeling, what I'd been through, I don't think he'd be holding onto my arm. I think he'd be running for his fucking life. I bit down hard on my lip. I could taste fresh blood on my tongue, and I liked it. It felt good. I liked the metal taste. I liked the feel of blood in my mouth, something to spit at him. When the time was right. I had so many things to ask him, but I didn't know where to start. So I just said, "Why did you keep it?" I had to try really hard to keep my voice steady and not let it crack or shake or waver or show him that I was scared. He didn't say anything, so I asked again, "Why did you keep her bracelet? Why not just throw it away or leave it on her wrist? Why take it?" He let go of my arm. He didn't look at me, just stared out at the sea. "I don't know," he said wearily. "Honestly, I've no idea why I took it. Insurance, I suppose. Clutching at straws, to hold something over someone else." He stopped speaking suddenly and closed his eyes. I didn't understand what he was talking about. But I had a feeling, like I'd opened something up, an opportunity. I moved very slightly away from him, then slightly more. He opened his eyes again but did nothing, just kept staring at the water, his face expressionless. He looked exhausted, beaten, like he had nothing left. I drew back on the bench. I could run. I'm really fast when I need to be. I glanced back at the track behind the house. I'd have a good chance of getting away from him if I headed straight across the track, over the stone wall and across the fields. If I did that, he wouldn't be able to follow in the car, and I'd have a chance. I didn't do it, even though I knew it might be the last chance I'd get. I stayed put. If it came down to it, I thought, it would be better to die knowing what happened to my mother, than to live and always wonder, to never ever know. I didn't think I could bear that. I got to my feet. He didn't move, just watched me as I rounded the table and sat down opposite him, forcing him to look at me. Do you know that I thought she'd left me? Mum. When they found her and they came and told me, I thought it was a choice. I thought she chose to die because she felt guilty about what happened to Katie, or because she was ashamed of that, or, I don't know, just because the water had a stronger pull for her than I did. He said nothing. I believed that! I shouted it as loud as I could, and he jumped. I believed that she abandoned me. Do you understand what that felt like? And now it turns out she didn't. She didn't choose anything. You took her. You took her from me just like you took Katie. He smiled at me. I remembered how we used to think he was handsome, and it turned my stomach. I didn't take Katie from you, he said. Katie wasn't yours, Lena. She was mine. I wanted to scream at him, to scratch his face. She wasn't yours. She wasn't. She wasn't. I dug my nails into my hands as hard as I could. I bit my lip and tasted the blood again and listened to him, justifying himself. I never thought of myself as the sort of person who would fall for a girl. Never. I thought people like that were ridiculous. Sad old losers who couldn't get a woman their own age. I laughed. Exactly, I said. You thought right. No. No. He shook his head. That's not true. It isn't. Look at me. I've never had any trouble getting women. They come on to me all the time. You shake your head now, but you've seen it. Christ, you did it yourself. I did fucking not. Lena. Do you honestly think I wanted you? You're deluded. It was a game. It was... I stopped talking. How do you even explain something like that to a man like him? How do you explain that it was nothing to do with him and everything to do with you? That, for me, in any case, it was about me and Katie and the things we could do together. The people we did them to were interchangeable. They didn't matter at all. Do you know what it's like when you look the way I do? I asked him. I mean, I know you think you're hot or whatever, but you have no idea what it's like to be me. Do you know how easy it is for me to make people do what I want, to make them uncomfortable? All I have to do is look at them a certain way, or stand near them, or stick my fingers in my mouth and suck, and I can see them go red or hard or whatever. That's what I was doing to you, you retard. I was taking the piss out of you. I didn't want you. He scoffed, gave this unconvinced little laugh. Right, okay, he said. If you say so, Lena. So what did you want? When you threatened to betray us? When you went shouting your mouth off so your mother could hear? What did you want? I wanted... I couldn't tell him what I wanted, because what I wanted was for things to go back to the way they were. I wanted us to go back to the time when Katie and I were always together, when we spent every hour of every day with each other, when we swam in the river and no one looked at us and our bodies were our own. I wanted to go back to the time before we came up with that game, before we realized what we could do. But that's only what I wanted. Katie didn't. Katie liked being looked at. For her, the game wasn't just a game, it was more. Right back at the beginning, when I first found out and we were arguing about it, she said to me, "You don't know what it feels like, Lena. Can you imagine? To have someone want you so much that he'll risk everything for you, like everything. His job, his relationship, his freedom. You don't understand what that feels like." I could feel Henderson watching me, waiting for me to speak. I wanted to find a way to say it, to make him see that she was getting off not just on him, but on her power over him. I'd have liked to be able to tell him that, to wipe that look off his face, the one that said he knew her and I didn't, not really. But I couldn't find the words just then. And in any case, it wasn't the whole story, because no one could deny that she did love him. There was a pain behind my eyes, a sharp pinch that told me I was about to cry again, and I stared down at the ground, because I didn't want him to see the tears in my eyes. And I saw that lying in the dirt, right between my feet, there was a nail. It was a long one, 3 or 4 inches at least. I moved my foot slightly so that I was covering the tip of it, and I pressed down to raise up the other end. "You were just jealous, Lena," Henderson said. "That's the truth, isn't it? You always were. I think you were jealous of both of us, weren't you? Of me because she chose me, and of her because I chose her. Neither of us wanted you. And so you made us pay. You and your mother. You..." I let him talk. I let him spout his deluded bullshit. And I didn't even care then that he was so wrong about everything, because all I could focus on was the tip of that nail, which I'd levered up with my foot. I slipped my hand under the table. Mark stopped talking. "You should never have been with her," I said. I was looking behind him, over his shoulder, trying to distract him. "You know that. You must know that. She loved me, and I loved her, completely." "You're an adult," I said, keeping my eye on the space behind him, and it worked. For a second he glanced over his shoulder, and I let my arm slip lower between my legs, stretching out my fingers, cold metal in my grasp. I straightened my back, prepared myself. "Do you really think it matters how you felt about her? You were her teacher. You're twice her fucking age. You were the one who was supposed to do the right thing." "She loved me," he said again. "Hangdog. Pathetic." "She was too young for you," I said, gripping the shaft of the nail tightly in my fist. "She was too good for you." I went for him. But I wasn't quick enough. As I sprang to my feet, I caught my hand under the table just for a second. Mark lunged at me, grabbing my left arm, yanking it as hard as he could, pulling me halfway across the table. "What are you doing?" He leaped to his feet, still holding onto me, and pulled me sideways, twisting my arm back behind me. I yelped with pain. "What are you doing?" he shouted, pushing my arm higher, opening my fist with his fingers. He took the nail from my hand and shoved me down on the table, his hand in my hair, his body on top of mine. I felt the metal spike graze against my throat, the weight of him on top of me, just like how she must have felt when they were together. Vomit came up to my throat and I spat it out and said, "She was too good for you! She was too good for you!" I said it again and again, until he'd crushed the breath out of me.
Jules. A clicking sound. Click and hiss. Click and hiss. Then,
"Ooh, there you are. I'll let myself in. Hope you don't mind."
The old woman, the one with the purple hair and the black eyeliner, the one who claims to be a psychic, the one who shuffles around town spitting and cursing at people, the one who I'd seen just the day before arguing with Louise in front of the house. She was sitting on the window seat, swinging her swollen calves back and forth. "I do mind," I said loudly, trying not to show her that I'd been afraid, that I was still, stupidly, ridiculously afraid of her. "I bloody do mind. What are you doing here?" Click and hiss. Click and hiss. The lighter. The silver lighter with Libby's initials engraved on it. She had it in her hand. "That's... where did you get that? That's Nell's lighter." She shook her head. "It is! How did you get hold of that? Have you been in this house taking things? Have you?" She waved a fat, gaudily bejeweled hand at me. "Oh, calm down, will ye?" She gave me a dirty brown smile. "Sit down. Sit down, Julia." She pointed at the armchair in front of her. "Come and join me." I was so taken aback that I obliged. I crossed the room and sat down in front of her while she shifted around in her seat.
"Not very comfy, this, is it? Could do with a bit more padding. Although, some might say, I've got enough upholstery of me own."
She chortled at her own joke. "What do you want?" I asked her. "Why do you have Nell's lighter?"
"Not Nell's. It's not Nell's, is it? See here?"
She pointed to the engraving.
"There. See? L.S.?
"Yes, I know. L.S. Libby Seaton. But it didn't actually belong to Libby, did it? I don't think they were manufacturing that particular sort of lighter in the 17th century." Nicky cackled.
"It's not Libby's. You thought L.S. was for Libby. No, no, no. This lighter belonged to Lauren. Lauren Townsend. Lauren used to be Slater."
"Lauren Slater?"
"That's right. Lauren Slater. Also Lauren Townsend. Your detective inspector's old girl."
Sean's mother. I was thinking about the boy coming up the steps. The boy on the bridge. The Lauren in the story is Sean Townsend's mother.
"That's right. Jesus, you're not the sharpest, are you? And it's not a story, is it?" "Not just a story. Lauren Slater married Patrick Townsend. She had a son who she loved to bits and pieces, all hunky-dory. Only then, so the coppers would have us believe, she went and topped herself."
She leaned forward and grinned at me.
"Not very likely, is it? I said so at the time, of course, but no one listens to me."
Was Sean really that boy? The one on the steps? The one who watched his mother fall, or didn't watch his mother fall, depending on who you believed? Was that really true? Not just something you made up, Nell? Lauren was the one who had the affair. The one who drank too much. The wanton one. The bad mother. Wasn't that her story? Lauren was the one on whose page you wrote, "Beckford is not a suicide spot. Beckford is a place to get rid of troublesome women." Was it that you were trying to tell me? Nicky was still talking.
"See," she said, jabbing a finger at me. "See? This is what I mean. No one listens to me. You're sitting there. And I'm right here in front of you, and you're not even listening."
"I am listening. I am. I don't understand." She harrumphed.
"Well, if you'd listen, you would. This lighter..."
Click, hiss.
"This belonged to Lauren, yes? You need to ask yourself, why's your sister got it up there with her things?"
"Up there. So you have been in the house. You did take it. You. Was it you? Have you been in the bathroom? Did you write something on the mirror?"
"Listen to me,"
She hauled herself to her feet. Don't worry about that. That's not important. She took a step towards me, leaning forward, and clicked the lighter again, the flame flickering between us. She smelled of burned coffee and overblown roses. I leaned back, away from her old woman scent.
You know what he used this for? She said.
What who used it for? Sean?
No, you idiot.
She rolled her eyes at me and heaved herself back onto the window seat, which creaked painfully underneath her.
Patrick, the old man? He didn't use it to light his smokes either. After his wife died, he took all her things, all her clothes and her paintings and everything she owned, and he put it out back and he burned it, burned the lot. And this,
she clicked the lighter one final time,
is what he used to start the fire.
Okay, I said, my patience wearing thin. But I still don't get it. Why did Nell have it? And why did you take it from her?
Questions, questions, Nicky said with a smile. Well, as to why I've got it, I needed something of hers, didn't I? So's I could speak to her properly. I used to hear her voice nice and clear. But, you know, sometimes voices get muted, don't they?
I've really no idea about that, I said coldly.
Oh, get you. You don't believe me. It's not like you'd ever talk to the dead, is it?
She laughed knowingly, and my scalp shriveled.
I needed something to conjure with. Here,
she offered the lighter to me.
You can have it back. I could have sold it, couldn't I? I could have taken all sorts and flogged them. Your sister had some expensive things, didn't she? Jewelry and that. But I didn't.
Very good of you. She grinned.
On to the next question. Why did your sister have that lighter? Well, I can't say for sure.
My frustration got the better of me. Really? I sneered at her. I thought you could talk to the spirits. I thought that was your thing. I looked around the room. Is she here now? Why don't you just ask her directly?
It's not that easy, is it? She said, wounded. I've been trying to raise her, but she's gone silent.
Could have fooled me.
There's no need to get sniffy. All I'm trying to do is help. All I'm trying to do is tell you.
Well, tell me then, I snapped. Spit it out.
Keep your hair on, she said.
Lower lip stuck out, chins wobbling.
I was telling you, if only you'd listen. The lighter is Lauren's, and Patrick had it last. And that's what's important. I don't know why Nell had it, but her having it is the thing, see? She took it from him, perhaps, or maybe he gave it to her. In any case, it's the important thing. Lauren is the important one. All this, your Nell, it's not about poor Katie Whittaker, or that silly teacher, or Katie's mum, or any of that. It's about Lauren and Patrick.
I bit my lip. How is this about them?
Well,
she shifted in her seat.
She was writing her stories about them, wasn't she? And she got her story from Sean Townsend, because after all, he was supposed to be a witness, wasn't he? So she thought he was telling the truth, and why wouldn't she?
Why wouldn't he? I mean, you're saying Sean lied about what happened to his mother. She pursed her lips.
Have you met the old man? He's a devil, he is, and I don't mean in a good way.
So, Sean lied about how his mother died because he's afraid of his father. Nicky shrugged.
I can't say for sure, but here's what I know. The story Nell heard, the first version, the one where Lauren runs off in the night and her husband and son go chasing after her, it wasn't true. I told her as much. Because, you see, my genie, that's my sister, she was around at the time. She was there that night.
Abruptly, she plunged her hand